intensifying dissatisfaction. When there was the banking crisis and the week of the moratorium, I... He paused suddenly. I've told you this many times, and you're sick of hearing it, aren't you? Andorin's lips twitched in a brief, dry smile. Namarti was not such an idiot as not to know what a bore he was. He just couldn't help it. Andorin said, You've told me this many times. He allowed the remainder of the question to hang in the air unanswered. The answer, after all, was an obvious affirmative. There was no need to face him with it. A slight flush crossed Namarti's sallow face. He said, But it could have gone on forever. The building, the chipping, without ever coming to a point, if I hadn't had the proper tool in my hands. And without any effort on my part, the tool came to me. The gods brought you Planchet, said Andorra neutrally. You're right. There will be a group of gardeners entering the Imperial Palace grounds soon. He paused and seemed to savor the thought. Men and women, enough to serve as a mask for the handful of our operatives who will accompany them. Among them will be you and Planchet. And what will make you and Planchet unusual is that you will be carrying blasters. Surely, said Andorin with deliberate malice behind a polite expression, we'll be stopped at the gates and held for questioning. Bringing an illicit blaster onto the palace grounds... You won't be stopped, said Namarti, missing the malice. You won't be searched. That's been arranged. You will all be greeted as a matter of course by some palace official. I don't know who would ordinarily be in charge of that task. The third assistant chamberlain in charge of grass and leaves, for all I know. But in this case, it will be Selden himself. The great mathematician will hurry out to greet the new gardeners and welcome them to the grounds. You're sure of that, I suppose? Of course I am. It's all been arranged. He will learn, at more or less the last minute, that his foster son is among those listed as new gardeners, and it will be impossible for him to refrain from coming out to see him. And when Selden appears, Planchet will raise his blaster. Our people will raise the cry of treason. In the confusion and hurly-burly, Planchet will kill Selden, and then you will kill Planchet. You will then drop your blaster and leave. There are those who will help you leave. It's been arranged. Is it absolutely necessary to kill Planchet? Namarti frowned. Why? Do you object to one killing and not to another? When Planchet recovers, do you wish him to tell the authorities all he knows about us? Besides, this is a family feud we are arranging. Don't forget that Planchet is, in actual fact, Rache Selden. It will look as though the two had fired simultaneously, or as though Selden had given orders that if his son made any hostile move, he was to be shot down. We will see to it that the family angle will be given full publicity. It'll be reminiscent of the bad old days of the bloody Emperor Manuel. The people of Trantor will surely be repelled by the sheer wickedness of the deed. That, piled on top of all the inefficiencies and breakdowns they've been witnessing and living through, will raise the cry for a new government, and no one will be able to refuse them, least of all the Emperor. And then we'll step in. Just like that? No, not just like that. I don't live in a dream world. There is likely to be some interim government, but it will fail. We'll see to it that it fails. and we'll come out in the open and revive the old Joranumite arguments that the Trantorians have never forgotten. And in time, in not too much time, I will be First Minister. And I will eventually be the Emperor. And Doran said, The chance of all this working is small. This is arranged, that is arranged, the other thing is arranged. All of it has to come together and mesh perfectly, or it will fail. Somewhere, someone is bound to mess up. It's an unacceptable risk. Unacceptable? For whom? For you? Certainly. You expect me to make certain that Planchette will kill his father, and you expect me to then kill Planchette. Why me? Aren't there tools worth less than I who might more easily be risked? Yes, but to choose anyone else would make failure certain. Who but you has so much riding on this mission that there is no chance you will turn back in a fit of vapors at the last minute? The risk is enormous. Isn't it worth it to you? You're playing for the imperial throne. And what risk are you taking, Chief? You will remain here quite comfortable and wait to hear the news. Namarti's lip curled. What a fool you are, Andoran. What an emperor you will make. Do you suppose I take no risk because I will be here? If the gambit fails, if the plot miscarries, if some of our people are taken, do you think they won't tell everything they know? If you were somehow caught, would you face the tender treatment of the Imperial Guard without ever telling them about me? And with a failed assassination attempt at hand, do you suppose they won't comb Trantor to find me? Do you suppose that in the end they will fail to find me? And when they do find me, what do you suppose I will have to face at their hands? Risk? I run a worse risk than any of you, just sitting here doing nothing. It boils down to this, Andoran. Do you or do you not wish to be emperor? Andoran said in a low voice, I wish to be emperor. And so things were set in motion. Chapter 22. Reach had no trouble seeing that he was being treated with special care. The whole group of would-be gardeners was now quartered in one of the hotels in the Imperial Sector, although not one of the prime hotels, of course. The gardeners were an odd lot, from 50 different worlds. But Raich had little chance to speak to any of them. Andoran, without being too obvious about it, had managed to keep him apart from the others. Raich wondered why. It depressed him. In fact, he had been feeling somewhat depressed since he had left Y. It interfered with his thinking process, and he fought it, but not with entire success. Andoran was himself wearing rough clothes and was attempting to look like a workman. He would be playing the part of a gardener as a way of running the show, whatever the show might be. Raich felt ashamed that he had not been able to penetrate the nature of that show. They had closed in on him and prevented all communication, so he hadn't even had the chance to warn his father. They might be doing this for every Trantorian who had been pushed into the group, for all he knew, just as an extreme precaution. Raich estimated that there might be a dozen Trantorians among them. All of them Namarti's people, of course, men and women both. What puzzled him was that Andoran treated him with what was almost affection. He monopolized him, insisted on having all his meals with him, treated him quite differently from the way in which he treated anyone else. Could it be because they had shared Manila? Rach did not know enough about the mores of the Y sector to be able to tell whether there might not be a polyandrous touch to their society. If two men shared a woman, did that make them, in a way, fraternal? Did it create a bond? Rach had never heard of such a thing, but he knew better than to suppose he had a grasp of even a tiny fraction of the infinite subtleties of galactic societies, even of Trantorian societies. But now that his mind had brought him back to Manila, he dwelled on her for a while. He missed her terribly, and it occurred to him that missing her might be the cause of his depression. Though, to tell the truth, what he was feeling now, as he was finishing lunch with Andoran, was almost despair, though he could think of no cause for it. Manila. She had said she wanted to visit the Imperial Sector, and presumably she could wheedle Andoran to her liking. He was desperate enough to ask a foolish question. "Mr. Andoran, I keep wondering if maybe you brought Miss Dubanka along with you, here to the Imperial Sector." Andoran looked utterly astonished. Then he laughed gently. "Manila, do you see her doing any gardening, or even pretending she could? No, no, Manila is one of those women invented for our quiet moments. She has no function at all otherwise." Then, "Why do you ask, Planchette?" Rach shrugged. "I don't know. It's sort of dull around here. I sort of thought..." His voice trailed away. Andoran watched him carefully. Finally he said, "Surely you're not of the opinion that it matters much which woman you are involved with? I assure you, it doesn't matter to her which man she's involved with. Once this is over, there will be other women, plenty of them." "When will this be over?" "Soon, and you're going to be part of it in a very important way." Andoran watched Rach narrowly. Rach said, "How important? Aren't I gonna be just a gardener?" His voice sounded hollow, and he found himself unable to put a spark in it. "You'll be more than that, Planchette. You'll be going in with a blaster."
"With a what?"
"A blaster."
"I never held a blaster, not in my whole life."
"There's nothing to it. You lift it, you point it, you close the contact, and someone dies."
"I can't kill anyone."
"I thought you were one of us, that you would do anything for the cause."
"I didn't mean kill."
Rach couldn't seem to collect his thoughts. Why must he kill? What did they really have in mind for him? And how would he be able to alert the Imperial Guard before the killing would be carried out? Andoran's face hardened suddenly, an instant conversion from friendly interest to stern decision. He said, "You must kill." Rach gathered all his strength.
"No, I ain't gonna kill nobody. That's final."
Andoran said, "Planchette, you will do as you are told."
"Not murder."
"Even murder."
"How you gonna make me?"
"I shall simply tell you to." Rach felt dizzy. What made Andoran so confident? He shook his head.
"No."
Andoran said, "We've been feeding you, Planchette, ever since you left Y. I made sure you ate with me. I supervised your diet, especially the meal you just ate." Rach felt the horror rise within him. He suddenly understood.
Desperants.
Rach felt the horror rise within him. He suddenly understood.
Desperants.
Exactly, said Andorin. You're a sharp devil, Planchet.
It's illegal.
Yes, of course. So's murder.
Rach knew about Desperants. It was a chemical modification of a perfectly harmless tranquilizer. The modified form, however, did not produce tranquility, but despair. It had been outlawed because of its use in mind control, though there were persistent rumors that the Imperial Guard used it. Andorin said, as though it were not hard to read Rach's mind,
It's called Desperance because that's an old word meaning hopelessness. I think you're feeling hopeless.
Never, whispered Rach.
Very resolute of you, but you can't fight the chemical. And the more hopeless you feel, the more effective the drug.
No chance.
Think about it, Planchet. Namati recognized you at once, even without your mustache. He knows you are Rach Selden, and at my direction, you are going to kill your father.
Rach muttered, Not before I kill you.
He rose from his chair. There should be no problem at all in this. Andorin might be taller, but he was slender and clearly no athlete. Rach would break him in two with one arm. But he swayed as he rose. He shook his head, but it wouldn't clear. Andorin rose too and backed away. He drew his right hand from where it had been resting within his left sleeve. He was holding a weapon. He said pleasantly,
I came prepared. I have been informed of your prowess as a Heliconian twister, and there will be no hand-to-hand combat.
He looked down at his weapon. This is not a blaster, he said. I can't afford to have you killed before you accomplish your task. It's a neuronic whip, much worse in a way. I will aim at your left shoulder, and believe me, the pain will be so excruciating that the world's greatest stoic would not be able to endure it.
Rach, who had been advancing slowly and grimly, stopped abruptly. He had been 12 years old when he had had a taste, a small one, of a neuronic whip. Once struck, no one ever forgets the pain however long he lives, however full of incidents his life is.
Andorin said, Moreover, I will use full strength, so that the nerves in your upper arms will be stimulated first into unbearable pain and then damaged into uselessness. You will never use your left arm again. I will spare the right so you can handle the blaster. Now, if you sit down and accept matters as you must, you may keep both arms. Of course, you must eat again, so your desperance level increases. Your situation will only worsen.
Rach felt the drug-induced despair settle over him. And that despair served in itself to deepen the effect. His vision was turning double, and he could think of nothing to say. Rach only knew that he would have to do what Andorin would tell him to do. He had played the game, and he had lost.
Chapter 23
No! Harry Selden was almost violent. I don't want you out there, Dors.
Dors Benevoli stared back at him with an expression as firm as his own.
Then I won't let you go either, Harry.
I must be there.
It is not your place. It is the gardener first class who must greet these new people.
So it is. But Gruber can't do it. He's a broken man.
He must have an assistant of some sort. Or let the old chief gardener do it. He holds the office till the end of the year.
The old chief gardener is too ill. Besides,
Selden hesitated. There are ringers among the gardeners, Trantorians. They're here for some reason. I have the names of every one of them. Have them taken into custody, then, every last one of them. It's simple. Why are you making it so complex? Because we don't know why they're here. Something's up. I don't see what 12 gardeners can do, but... No, let me rephrase that. I can see a dozen things they can do, but I don't know which one of those things they've planned. We will indeed take them into custody, but I must know more about everything before it's done. We have to know enough to winkle out everyone in the conspiracy from top to bottom, and we must know enough of what they're doing to be able to make the proper punishment stick. I don't want to get 12 men and women on what is essentially a misdemeanor charge. They'll plead desperation, the need for a job. They'll complain that it isn't fair for Trantorians to be excluded. They'll get plenty of sympathy, and we'll be left looking like fools. We must give them a chance to convict themselves of more than that. Besides... There was a long pause, and Doris said wrathfully, Well, what's the new besides? Selden's voice lowered. One of the 12 is Rach, using the alias Planchette. What? Why are you surprised? I sent him to Y to infiltrate the Joranumite movement, and he's succeeded in infiltrating something. I have every faith in him. If he's there, he knows why he's there, and he must have some sort of plan to put a spoke in the wheel. But I want to be there too. I want to see him. I want to be in a position to help him if I can. If you want to help him, have 50 guards of the palace standing shoulder to shoulder on either side of your gardeners. No. Again, we'll end up with nothing. The Imperial Guard will be in place, but not in evidence. The gardeners in question must think they have a clear hand to do whatever it is they plan to do. Before they can do so, but after they have made it quite plain what they intend, we'll have them. That's risky. It's risky for Reach. Risks are something we have to take. There's more riding on this than individual lives. That is a heartless thing to say. You think I have no heart? Even if it broke, my concern would have to be with Psycho. Don't say it. She turned away, as if in pain. I understand, said Selden, but you mustn't be there. Your presence would be so inappropriate that the conspirators will suspect we know too much and will abort their plan. I don't want their plan aborted. He paused, then said softly, Doors, you say your job is to protect me. That comes before protecting Rach, and you know that. I wouldn't insist on it. But to protect me is to protect psychohistory and the entire human species. That must come first. What I have of psychohistory tells me that I, in turn, must protect the center at all costs, and that is what I am trying to do. Do you understand? Doris said, I understand. Then turned away from him. Selden thought, and I hope I'm right. If he weren't, she would never forgive him. Far worse, he would never forgive himself, psychohistory or not. Chapter 24 They were lined up beautifully, feet spread apart, hands behind their backs, every one in a natty green uniform, loosely fitted and with wide pockets. There was very little gender differential, and one could only guess that some of the shorter ones were women. The hoods covered whatever hair they had. But then, gardeners were supposed to clip their hair quite short, either sex, and there could be no facial hair,
Why that should be, one couldn't say. The word tradition covered it all, as it covered so many things, some useful, some foolish. Facing them was Mandel Gruber, flanked on either side by an assistant. Gruber was trembling, his wide-opened eyes glazed. Harry Seldon's lips tightened. If Gruber could but manage to say, "The Emperor's gardeners greet you all," that would be enough. Seldon himself would then take over. His eyes swept over the new contingent, and he located Raich. His heart jumped a bit. It was the mustacheless Raich in the front row, standing more rigid than the rest, staring straight ahead. His eyes did not move to meet Seldon's. He showed no sign of recognition, however subtle. "Good," thought Seldon. "He's not supposed to. He's giving nothing away." Gruber muttered a weak welcome, and Seldon jumped in. He advanced with an easy stride, putting himself immediately before Gruber, and said, "Thank you, Gardener First Class. Men and women, gardeners of the Emperor, you are to undertake an important task. You will be responsible for the beauty and health of the only open land on our great world of Trantor, capital of the Galactic Empire. You will see to it that if we don't have the endless vistas of open, undomed worlds, we will have a small jewel here that will outshine anything else in the Empire. You will all be under Mandel Gruber, who will shortly become Chief Gardener. He will report to me when necessary, and I will report to the Emperor. This means, as you can all see, that you will be only 3 levels removed from the Imperial presence, and you will always be under his benign watch. I am certain that even now he is surveying us from the small palace, his personal home, which is the building you see to the right, the one with the opal-layered dome, and that he is pleased with what he sees. Before you start work, of course, you will all undertake a course of training that will make you entirely familiar with the grounds and its needs. You will..." He had by this time moved almost stealthily to a point directly in front of Raich, who still remained motionless, unblinking. Seldon tried not to look unnaturally benign, and then a slight frown crossed his face. The person directly behind Raich looked familiar. He might have gone unrecognized if Seldon had not studied his hologram. Wasn't that Gleb Andoran of Y? Raich's patron in Y, in fact? What was he doing here? Andoran must have noticed Seldon's sudden regard, for he muttered something between scarcely opened lips. And Raich's right arm, moving forward from behind his back, plucked a blaster out of the wide pocket of his green doublet. So did Andoran. Seldon felt himself going into near shock. How could blasters have been allowed onto the grounds? Confused, he barely heard the cries of treason and the sudden noise of running and shouting. All that really occupied Seldon's mind was Raich's blaster pointing directly at him, and Raich looking at him without any sign of recognition. Seldon's mind filled with horror as he realized that his son was going to shoot, and that he himself was only seconds from death. Chapter 25. A blaster, despite its name, does not blast in the proper sense of the term. It vaporizes and blows out an interior, and if anything, causes an implosion. There is a soft sighing sound, leaving what appears to be a blasted object. Harry Seldon did not expect to hear that sound. He expected only death. It was, therefore, with surprise that he heard the distinctive soft sighing sound, and he blinked rapidly as he looked down at himself, slack-jawed. He was alive? He thought it as a question, not a statement. Raich was still standing there,
his blaster pointing forward, his eyes glazed. He was absolutely motionless, as though some motive power had ceased. Behind him was the crumpled body of Andoran, fallen in a pool of blood. And standing next to him, blaster in hand, was a gardener. The hood had slipped away. The gardener was clearly a woman with freshly clipped hair. She allowed herself a glance at Selden and said, "Your son knows me as Manella Dubanka. I'm a security officer. Do you want my reference number, First Minister?"
"No," said Selden faintly.
Imperial Guard had converged on the scene. "My son, what's wrong with my son?"
"Desperance, I think," said Manella. "That can be washed out eventually."
She reached forward to take the blaster out of Rach's hand.
"I'm sorry I didn't act sooner. I had to wait for an overt move, and when it came, it almost caught me napping."
"I had the same trouble. We must take Rach to the palace hospital." A confused noise suddenly emanated from the small palace. It occurred to Selden that the Emperor was indeed watching the proceedings, and if so, he must be grandly furious indeed.
"Take care of my son, Miss Dubanka," said Selden. "I must see the Emperor."
He set off at an undignified run through the chaos on the great lawns, and dashed into the small palace without ceremony. Cleon could scarcely grow any angrier over that. And there, with an appalled group watching in stupor, there on the semicircular stairway was the body of His Imperial Majesty, Cleon the First, smashed all but beyond recognition. His rich imperial robes now served as a shroud. Cowering against the wall, staring stupidly at the horrified faces surrounding him, was Mandel Gruber. Selden felt he could take no more. He took in the blaster lying at Gruber's feet. It had been Andoran's, he was sure. He asked softly, "Gruber, what have you done?" Gruber, staring at him, babbled, "Everyone screaming and yelling. I thought, who would know? They would think someone else had killed the Emperor. But then I couldn't run."
"But, Gruber, why?"
"So I wouldn't have to be Chief Gardener." And he collapsed. Selden stared in shock at the unconscious Gruber. Everything had worked out by the narrowest of margins. He himself was alive, Rach was alive, Andoran was dead, and the Joranumite conspiracy would now be hunted down to the last person. The center would have held, just as psychohistory had dictated. And then one man, for a reason so trivial as to defy analysis, had killed the Emperor. And now, thought Selden in despair, what do we do? What happens next? Part 3. Dors Venabili. Venabili, Dors. The life of Harry Selden is well encrusted with legend and uncertainty, so that little hope remains of ever obtaining a biography that can be thoroughly factual. Perhaps the most puzzling aspect of his life deals with his consort, Dors Venabili. There is no information whatever concerning Dors Venabili, except for her birth on the world of Cinna, prior to her arrival at Streeling University to become a member of the history faculty. Shortly after that, she met Selden, and remained his consort for 28 years. If anything, her life is more interlarded with legend than Selden's is. There are quite unbelievable tales of her strength and speed, and she was widely spoken of, or perhaps whispered of, as the Tiger Woman. Still more puzzling than her coming, however,
is her going? For after a certain time we hear of her no more, and there is no indication as to what happened. Her role as a historian is evidenced by her works on Encyclopedia Galactica. Chapter 1. Wanda was almost 8 years old now, going by Galactic Standard Time, as everyone did. She was quite the little lady, grave in manner, with straight, light brown hair. Her eyes were blue, but were darkening, and she might well end with the brown eyes of her father. She sat there, lost in thought. 60. That was the number that preoccupied her. Grandfather was going to have a birthday, and it was going to be his 60th. And 60 was a large number. It bothered her because yesterday she had had a bad dream about it. She went in search of her mother. She would have to ask. Her mother was not hard to find. She was talking to Grandfather, about the birthday, surely. Wanda hesitated. It wouldn't be nice to ask in front of Grandfather. Her mother had no trouble whatever sensing Wanda's consternation. She said, "One minute, Harry, and let's see what's bothering Wanda. What is it, dear?" Wanda pulled at her hand. "Not here, Mother. Private." Manella turned to Harry Seldon. "See how early it starts? Private lives, private problems. Of course, Wanda, shall we go to your room?" "Yes, Mother." Wanda was clearly relieved. Hand in hand, they went, and then her mother said, "Now, what is the problem, Wanda?"
"It's Grandfather, Mother."
"Grandfather? I can't imagine him doing anything to bother you."
"Well, he is."
Wanda's eyes filled with sudden tears.
"Is he going to die?"
"Your grandfather? What put that into your head, Wanda?"
"He's going to be 60. That's so old."
"No, it isn't. It's not young, but it's not old either. People live to be 80, 90, even 100. And your grandfather is strong and healthy. He'll live a long time."
"Are you sure?"
She was sniffing. Manella grasped her daughter by the shoulders and looked her straight in the eyes. "We must all die someday, Wanda. I've explained that to you before. Just the same, we don't worry about it till the someday is much closer." She wiped Wanda's eyes gently. "Grandfather is going to stay alive till you're all grown up and have babies of your own. You'll see. Now come back with me. I want you to talk to Grandfather." Wanda sniffed again. Seldon looked at the little girl with a sympathetic expression on her return and said, "What is it, Wanda? Why are you unhappy?" Wanda shook her head. Seldon turned his gaze to the girl's mother. "Well, what is it, Manella?" Manella shook her head. "She'll have to tell you herself." Seldon sat down and tapped his lap. "Come, Wanda, have a seat and tell me your troubles." She obeyed and wriggled a bit, then said,
"I'm scared."
Seldon put his arm around her. "Nothing to be scared of in your old grandfather." Manella made a face.
"Wrong word."
Seldon looked up at her.
"Grandfather?"
"No. Old." That seemed to break the dike. Wanda burst into tears.
"You're old, Grandfather."
"I suppose so. I'm 60. He bent his face down to Wanda's and whispered, I don't like it either, Wanda. That's why I'm glad you're only 7 going on 8.
Your hair is white, Grandpa.
It wasn't always. It just turned white recently.
White hair means you're going to die, Grandpa.
Selden looked shocked. He said to Manella, What is all this?
I don't know, Harry. It's her own idea.
I had a bad dream, said Wanda.
Selden cleared his throat. We all have bad dreams now and then, Wanda. It's good we do. Bad dreams get rid of bad thoughts, and then we're better off.
It was about you dying, Grandfather.
I know. I know. Dreams can be about dying, but that doesn't make them important. Look at me. Don't you see how alive I am, and cheerful, and laughing? Do I look as though I'm dying? Tell me.
No.
There you are, then. Now you go out and play and forget all about this. I'm just having a birthday, and everyone will have a good time. Go ahead, dear. Wanda left in reasonable cheer, but Selden motioned to Manella to stay. Chapter 2 Selden said, Wherever do you think Wanda got such a notion?
Come now, Harry. She had a Salvanian gecko that died, remember? One of her friends had a father who died in an accident, and she sees deaths on holovision all the time. It is impossible for any child to be so protected as not to be aware of death. Actually, I wouldn't want her to be so protected. Death is an essential part of life. She must learn that.
I don't mean death in general, Manella. I mean my death in particular. What has put that into her head? Manella hesitated. She was very fond indeed of Harry Selden. She thought, who would not be? So how can I say this? But how could she not say this? So she said, Harry, you yourself put it into her head.
I?
Of course. You've been speaking for months of turning 60 and complaining loudly of growing old. The only reason people are setting up this party is to console you.
It's no fun turning 60, said Selden indignantly. Wait, wait, you'll find out.
I will, if I'm lucky. Some people don't make it to 60. Just the same, if turning 60 and being old are all you talk about, you end up frightening an impressionable little girl.
Selden sighed and looked troubled. I'm sorry, but it's hard. Look at my hands. They're getting spotted, and soon they'll be gnarled. I can do hardly anything in the way of twisting any longer. A child could probably force me to my knees.
In what way does that make you different from other 60-year-olds? At least your brain is working as well as ever. How often have you said that that's all that counts?
I know, but I miss my body. Manella said with just a touch of malice,
Especially when Doris doesn't seem to get any older.
Selden said uneasily, Well, yes, I suppose. He looked away, clearly unwilling to talk about the matter. Manella looked at her father-in-law gravely. The trouble was he knew nothing about children. Or about people generally. It was hard to think that he had spent 10 years as first minister under the old emperor, and yet ended up knowing as little about people as he did. Of course, he was entirely wrapped up in this psychohistory of his that dealt with quadrillions of people, which ultimately meant dealing with no people at all as individuals. And how could he know about children when he had had no contact with any child except Rach, who had entered his life as a 12-year-old? Now he had Wanda, who was, and would probably remain to him, an utter mystery. Manila thought all this lovingly. She had the incredible desire to protect Harry Seldon from a world he did not understand. It was the only point at which she and her mother-in-law, Doris Van Abbeley, met and coalesced, this desire to protect Harry Seldon. Manila had saved Seldon's life 10 years before. Doris, in her strange way, had considered this an invasion of her prerogative and had never quite forgiven Manila. Seldon, in his turn, had then saved Manila's life. She closed her eyes briefly, and the whole scene returned to her, almost as though it were happening to her right now. Chapter 3. It was a week after the assassination of Cleon, and a horrible week it had been. All of Trantor was in chaos. Harry Seldon still kept his office as First Minister, but it was clear he had no power. He called in Manila Dubanka. "I want to thank you for saving Rach's life and my own. I haven't had a chance to do so yet." Then, with a sigh, "I have scarcely had a chance to do anything this past week." Manila asked, "What happened to the mad gardener?" "Executed. At once. No trial. I tried to save him by pointing out that he was insane. But there was no question about it. If he had done anything else, committed any other crime, his madness would have been recognized and he would have been spared. Committed, locked up and treated, but spared nonetheless. But to kill the Emperor..." Seldon shook his head sadly. Manila said, "What's going to happen now, First Minister?" "I'll tell you what I think. The Entun dynasty is finished. Cleon's son will not succeed. I don't think he wants to. He fears assassination in his turn, and I don't blame him one bit. It would be much better for him to retire to one of the family estates on some outer world and live a quiet life there. Because he is a member of the Imperial House, he will undoubtedly be allowed to do this. You and I may be less fortunate." Manila frowned. "In what way, sir?" Seldon cleared his throat. "It is possible to argue that because you killed Gleb Andoran, he dropped his blaster, which became available to Mandel Gruber, who used it to kill Cleon. Therefore, you bear a strong share of the responsibility of the crime, and it may even be said that it was all prearranged." "But that's ridiculous. I am a member of the security establishment, fulfilling my duties, doing what I was ordered to do." Seldon smiled sadly. "You're arguing rationally, and rationality is not going to be in fashion for a while. What's going to happen now, in the absence of a legitimate successor to the imperial throne, is that we are bound to have a military government." In later years, when Manila came to understand the workings of psychohistory, she wondered if Seldon had used the technique to work out what was going to happen, for the military rule certainly came to pass. At the time, however, he made no mention of his fledgling theory. "If we do have a military government," he went on, "then it will be necessary for them to establish a firm rule at once, crush any signs of disaffection, act vigorously and cruelly, even in defiance of rationality and justice. If they accuse you, Miss Dubanka, of being part of a plot to kill the Emperor, you will be slaughtered, not as an act of justice, but as a way of cowing the people of Trantor." For that matter, they might say that I was part of the plot, too. After all, I went out to greet the new gardeners when it was not my place to do so. Had I not done so, there would have been no attempt to kill me. You would not have struck back, and the emperor would have lived. Do you see how it all fits?
I can't believe they will do this.
Perhaps they won't. I'll make them an offer that just perhaps they may not wish to refuse.
What would that be?
I will offer to resign as First Minister. They don't want me. They won't have me. But the fact is that I do have supporters at the Imperial Court. And even more important, people in the outer worlds who find me acceptable. That means that if the members of the Imperial Guard force me out, then even if they don't execute me, they will have some trouble. If, on the other hand, I resign, stating that I believe the military government is what Trantor and the Empire needs, then I actually help them, you see? He mused a little and said, "Besides, there is the little matter of psychohistory." That was the first time Manella had ever heard the word.
"What's that?"
"Something I'm working on. Cleon believed in its powers very strongly, more strongly than I did at the time. And there's a considerable feeling in the court that psychohistory is, or might be, a powerful tool that could be made to work on the side of the government, whatever the government might be. Nor does it matter if they know nothing about the details of the science. I'd rather they didn't. Lack of knowledge can increase what we might call the superstitious aspect of the situation. In which case, they will let me continue working on my research as a private citizen. At least, I hope so. And that brings me to you."
"What about me?"
"I'm going to ask, as part of the deal, that you be allowed to resign from the security establishment and that no action be taken against you over the events in connection with the assassination. I ought to be able to get that."
"But you're talking about ending my career."
"Your career is in any case over. Even if the Imperial Guard doesn't work up an order of execution against you, can you imagine that you will be allowed to continue working as a security officer?"
"But what do I do? How do I make a living?"
"I'll take care of that, Miss Dubanka. In all likelihood, I'll go back to Streeling University with a large grant for my psychohistorical research, and I'm sure that I can find a place for you." Manella, round-eyed, said,
"Why should you?"
Selden said, "I can't believe you're asking. You saved Rachel's life and my own. Is it conceivable that I don't owe you anything?" And it was as he said. Selden resigned gracefully from the post he had held for 10 years. He was given a fulsome letter of appreciation for his services by the just-formed military government, a junta led by certain members of the Imperial Guard and the armed forces. He returned to Streeling University, and Manella Dubanka, relieved of her own post as a security officer, went with Selden and his family. Chapter 4. Reach came in, blowing on his hands. "I'm all for deliberate variety in the weather. You don't want things under a dome to always be the same. Today, though, they made it just a little too cold and worked up a wind. Besides, I think it's about time someone complained to weather control."
"I don't know that it's weather control's fault," said Selden. "It's getting harder to control things in general."
"I know. Deterioration." Rach brushed his thick black mustache with the back of his hand. He did that often, as though he had never quite managed to get over the few months during which he had been mustacheless in Y. He had also put on a little weight around the middle, and overall had come to seem very comfortable and middle class. Even his doll accent had faded somewhat. He took off his light coverall and said, "And how's the old birthday boy?" Resenting it. "Wait, wait, my son. One of these days you'll be celebrating your 40th birthday. We'll see how funny you think that is."
"Not as funny as 60.
"Stop joking," said Manella, who had been chafing Rach's hands, trying to warm them. Selden spread his own hands. "We're doing the wrong thing, Rach. Your wife is of the opinion that all this talk about my turning 60 has sent little Wanda into a decline over the possibility of my dying."
"Really?" said Rach. "That accounts for it, then. I stopped in to see her, and she told me at once, before I even had a chance to say a word, that she had had a bad dream. Was it about your dying?"
"Apparently," said Selden.
"Well, she'll get over that. No way of stopping bad dreams."
"I'm not dismissing it that easily," said Manella. "She's brooding over it, and that's not healthy. I'm going to get to the bottom of this."
"As you say, Manella," said Rach agreeably. "You're my dear wife, and whatever you say about Wanda goes."
And he brushed his mustache again. His dear wife. It hadn't been so easy to make her his dear wife. Rach remembered his mother's attitude toward the possibility. Talk about nightmares. It was he who had the periodic nightmares in which he had to face down the furious Doris Van Ebbele once more. Chapter 5. Rach's first clear memory, after emerging from his desperance-induced ordeal, was that of being shaved. He felt the vibro-razor moving along his cheek, and he said weakly, "Don't cut anywhere near my upper lip, barber. I want my mustache back." The barber, who had already received his instructions from Selden, held up a mirror to reassure him. Doris Van Ebbele, who was sitting at his bedside, said, "Let him work, Rach. Don't excite yourself." Rach's eyes turned toward her momentarily, and he was quiet. When the barber left, Doris said, "How do you feel, Rach?"
"Rotten," he muttered. "I'm so depressed I can't stand it."
"That's the lingering effect of the desperance you've been dosed with. The effects will wash out."
"I can't believe it. How long has it been?"
"Never mind. It will take time. You were pumped full of it."
He looked around restlessly. "Has Manella been to see me?"
"That woman?"
Rach was getting used to hearing Doris speak of Manella with those words and in that tone of voice.
"No, you're not fit for visitors yet."
"No, you're not fit for visitors yet."
Interpreting the look on Rach's face, Doris quickly added, "I'm an exception, because I'm your mother, Rach. Why would you want that woman to see you anyway? You're in no condition to be seen."
"All the more reason to see her," muttered Rach. "I want her to see me at my worst."
He then turned to one side dispiritedly. "I want to sleep." Doris Van Ebbele shook her head. Later that day, she said to Selden, "I don't know what we're going to do about Rach, Harry. He's quite unreasonable."
Selden said, "He's not well, Doris. Give the young man a chance."
"He keeps muttering about that woman, whatever her name is."
"Manella Dubanka. It's not a hard name to remember."
I think he wants to set up housekeeping with her, live with her, marry her. Selden shrugged. Rach is 30, old enough to make up his own mind. As his parents, we have something to